Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. This is Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to, it's been a long time. And I know there's been a lot of things that have happened. So I reached out to Luke and I was like, well, might as well do a January episode. Because since the bowl game, since our last edition, between schedule changes, between staff changes, between transfer in and outs, there's a lot to talk about, Luke. But maybe most importantly, wedding planning.
I did get a text from you the other day, which was like, can you tell me the things that were most valuable that you got for your wedding? Which I basically went to my wife and we went.
If you couldn't tell, I'm trying to figure out my wedding registry. Now, obviously, there's a lot of items on there in terms of like kitchen things. If I've learned anything, it's essentially just a wedding registry has become, I'm going to throw away all the hand-me-down and old pots, pans, silverware, knife block type of things. And I'm actually going to hopefully get some nice silverware, some nice pots and nice pans. But I was also like, Luke, what other things should I put on there? Because I want to have, yes, practical things, but also like, I don't want this to then turn into, let's get like seven glasses that we'll never use or whatever the heck she put on there.
I'm trying to even think of what I told you. Oh, it doesn't matter.
You told me knives. Yeah. But like I bought a new grill a gas grill a few months ago. So like I have like utensils for that amongst other things. If you have a wedding registry suggestions for me, I'm in the process of doing it. You know how to slide into the DMs at Ryan Burns MN, but it's like I want to have like actual things I'll use on there before like, by the way, did you know I can open a registry at Cabela's, which I would love to, but I also...
That is so on-brand for you.
I know, but it's like I need to have... we need to have some showers and whatever else things people do for a wedding that... we got to have some things go before I can start to potentially open up a Cabela's registry. Other than that, as Luke knows, it's just been a lot of different things going on. How's life been for you the last few weeks, Luke?
If you can't tell by my voice, I have a cold. I'm
a non-COVID related cold.
My eldest son, he's got to be up to like 15 COVID tests with like daycare protocols, all negative. It's just inevitable he's going to get COVID. We're resigned to that fact. And then I have since acquired from youngest son this cold, and I've had it for a couple of days now. I think this is the peak worst of it so far. So if I sound odd,
your voice actually doesn't sound too bad.
Really?
For someone.
Oh man, I feel like I sound terrible in my head.
No, you don't sound too nasally to me. I would also mention, are kids really as big of germ balls? And I mean that with peace and love, Luke. But they are just like diseased, riddled little things that are just going to give you every known cold in the entire universe. If I've learned anything from you, that seems to be the way it goes.
Yeah, it's fairly accurate. First kid, I'd say first year of life, tons of colds. Second year, not so bad. This one, we're back in first year and we're back to all the colds. But, you know, it's how you build an immune system. So it is what it is. I'm thankful that, you know, they're able to go to school and that the school has great processes and procedures around COVID and all that. But, man, it is an absolute trip to deal with sick kids these days, especially during a pandemic.
Can I also, like, I just want to, before we talk football, and we'll get there, I promise, but, like, we're in the off season now. We're going to talk about non-football things. Can I tell you about a pet peeve that I figured that I wanted to run by you? I think I texted you about this.
I was going
to
say, like, I'd say, like, 70% of your text messages are pet peeves. But, yeah.
God, I just get so triggered.
Yeah.
So, like, I traveled down to the bowl game and back, and it involves airplanes. I have two big pet peeves that I just want to air my grievances out here on the podcast.
I even know number what this one, is.
Number like, one, you already know the first one, but if you are a person who reclines their seat, I absolutely hate you with a burning passion, unless you are in first class. Like, I get it then because there's adequate space. But as someone who is 6'4" and knee to seat space is at a quality, if you recline your seat, I will absolutely bury my knees into the back of your seat, and I don't give I don't want to have an I don't give two rips. Now, Luke, you're also a gentleman that's over 6'2", I would say.
Thank you. That's the first time you acknowledge that I
but you are on the other end of the spectrum, and I just do not understand.
So to me, this comes down to, you know, my background is in product development. If they designed it that way, I'm going to use it. So, but the reality is I rarely, unless it's on an international flight, recline my seat. But I understand it's there, so it's not going to bother me. I also don't love it when people recline their seat, but what can I do? They can do it. So
You can bury your knees into the back of the seat. Now, I'm not saying I'm being like a screaming toddler, like alternating feet on the back of the seat. But it's also like, know who's sitting behind you. And if you got a big dude, which I'm 6'4", 230 something, like, can we not, if we're sitting here in like economy plus, or, you know, back here with the plebs with, you know, us in economy, I just can't stand. The other thing I want to say is I cannot stand, I do not understand it for the life of me. When the airplane lands, why do people clap?
I don't.
Have you ever had that one happen? I've had that happen like three times in the last couple of years, and I do not understand it at all. I mean, to be fair, I'm grouping these people in with the people who at the end of a movie clap. It just bothers me. And again, I feel like now that I'm almost 30, that I'm becoming old man yelling at the cloud in the sky.
I don't think I've ever seen that, actually.
I've had it in my lifetime, and I've flown on a few planes here and there.
Yeah.
I bet you I've had it happen between 5 and 10 times where we land, and it doesn't matter what the duration is, but if you have some people who I would assume it's like their first time or something, or it was a little bit bumpy, that people just start clapping, and I'm just like, what are we doing here? The pilots can't hear you, ma'am. Hello?
Maybe I just blocked it out, but I feel like I've never experienced that. That might be a unique to Ryan Byrne situation.
Have you ever been in a movie and say it's like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like, you go to like a movie that premieres on a weekend, so you're there. And it's
packed. Yeah, I've been to a movie where they clap.
Do they know like the filmmakers can't hear you, or I'm happy that you liked it, but I don't need to hear you applauding at the end of the movie, Karen?
Yeah, I don't have the slightest idea.
So expect this all off season, folks, is me just kind of airing my grievances against society or whatever is on the top of my head before we get into football talk, because I'm getting old now and I just like to air my grievances into the microphone.
Okay, now that people understand what it's like to have a consistent stream of text messages with you, I think we should talk about some football.
And all right, let's get into it, I suppose.
Okay, so the big news probably that we need to get into is the schedule change for 2022. I did see a lot of Twitter banter that people didn't like this per se. And this was just not just really? Minnesota Twitter, but Big Ten Twitter. Like,
really?
Felt it.
I saw... I- I saw the complete opposite, where it was I feel like every fan base or media person I saw was like, yeah, this definitely benefits our team.
Oh, man. I thought there were a lot of people like, well, it's obvious they want Ohio State to be better.
I think Ohio State and like Michigan have one more home game than everybody else, which.
Oh, well, I don't know. But I
don't know if that's true or not. I never ended up looking into it.
Maybe generally speaking, it's all even and fair. I think this actually made sense given the pandemic and how they had the 2020 shortened season and, you know, things that had to get adjusted. Like, you know, wasn't Minnesota going to play like three home games against the same opponent or something like that? Like,
yeah,
it got goofy. Like, I'm glad they did this. It makes sense. Minnesota is going to be at home forever.
They were supposed to be at home forever to start the season. Then they were supposed to have four of their last five on the road, which was going to be brutal.
Right.
Now they have three of their last five at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so let's get into it. Let's go month by month. It's easiest. And that's where
nothing changes in the non-conference. We can probably skip that.
Correct. Right? So you have the Fighting Jerry Kills on a Thursday night to start the year. Then you get Western Illinois, which it almost came to fruition, and we'll talk about it towards the tail end, where Zach Anikstad does transfer to a team with Illinois in their title. It just happens to be not Western Illinois University. And then it's going to be another revenge game as two former Gopher coaches and Mike Sanford and Clay Patterson come back to town on the 17th. Now, that final game was supposed to be up September for Minnesota on the 24th. The Pig. It was supposed to be home versus Iowa. Now you get to travel to Michigan State.
And
the Michigan State was supposed to be first weekend of November for all you deer hunters. Now they have changed it to where Michigan State is that final weekend. So it's interesting. I mean, I don't know that there's really a benefit other than Minnesota finally gets to go on the road. Because, again, it was supposed to be four of the last five of the 2022 schedule. We're going to be road Big Ten games, which that's brutal, man. I don't know how else you want to put it, but like, I'm okay with going to Michigan State earlier in the year than later in the year.
Yep.
I mean, I have no rationale for that, but what do you think?
Yeah, no, I don't have any complaints about the change in the schedule. You know, this is a Michigan State team that outperformed expectation drastically, right? They were 7-2 in conference, 11-2 overall. This is another revenge game for the Gophers. I'm trying to think of the offensive coordinator,
Jay Johnson. Yes, technically, I don't know that Jay Johnson really would characterize it as a revenge game, but it's
the narrative
former
we've
Golden
gone with.
Gopher. Yeah. Yes, former Golden Gopher offensive coordinator under the Tracy Clays regime for that one year. Jay Johnson is now the OC at Michigan State with Mel Tucker. So there's a lot of just storylines in September. It's going to be a September full of storylines. And then we get to October, and everything kind of flips on its head a little bit. So, yeah.
So Purdue, October 1st, that'll be a Saturday. That'll be the first Big Ten home game.
And I will believe that's the homecoming game. It was supposed to be home versus Rutgers, which, again, we will get to Rutgers, who now has a defensive coordinator that we're all very familiar with.
But let's talk about Purdue. Obviously, Brohm and Fleck. Fleck's kind of had Brohm's number. But Purdue likely is going to return like the best quarterback in the Big Ten West in Aiden O'Connell, right? I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you.
But he will be down David Bell and, you know, some others. But, yeah.
So it's going to – and for whatever it's worth, Minnesota just – or P.J. Fleck has Jeff Brohm's number. And it just has been what it is. And that's where Purdue – I mean, it was a very good team this past year in terms of – they're a borderline top 25 team, I would say. Played in a heck of a bowl game down there in Nashville that you could argue Minnesota should have been in. But so that first weekend, instead of Rutgers at home, you get Purdue at home. The next weekend was supposed to be an away game at the Fighting Lovie Smiths of Illinois. Now it's a bye week. And I know that you care, Luke, but second straight year that this is the bye week weekend. It's kind of that second weekend of October, and it's the second straight weekend I have a wedding that happens to fall on that weekend. So I am incredibly thrilled that I don't have to make the decision.
Wedding or work?
Wedding or work. So yes, the 8th is now the bye week.
Could you imagine, like, you don't go, and then you say, "Hey Luke, can you go up and just tweet about the game for me?" Like, how bad would that coverage be?
Well, I already have to figure out the bowl game coverage for next year, because Lord knows I won't be able to make that with my wedding.
I'm totally going to go. I got you. Don't worry. I got this. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
All right. So the bye week went from the last weekend, which was going to be the 29th of October, to now it is the 8th. So you play 5 games, you get a bye, and then you play 7, which, again,
I don't hate it.
I don't know that there's any validity to, like, when your bye week is and when it's not and how that terms and win and losses. But, like, I'm okay with playing 5 bye week, then 7, instead of playing 8 bye week, then 4.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
All right, so after the bye week, Minnesota has the bye week to prepare for Illinois. They're on the road at Illinois. There was supposed to be a home game against Purdue, but they're on the road at Illinois. And this starts a back-to-back road games where the following week, they're on the road at Penn State. It was supposed to be on the weekend of the 22nd. Originally, it was an away game at Nebraska. Now it's at Penn State. And the thing I would note here, Luke, is this is a sandwich game for Penn State. Now, with the schedule changes, and what I mean by that is on the weekend before Minnesota, they play Michigan. Penn State does. The weekend after Minnesota, they play Ohio State.
Sure.
So is this the proverbial quote-unquote trap game for Penn State is my question to you, Luke. And this is also the Kirk Sciarra revenge game. Yeah,
that's what I was going to bring up. It is the Kirk Sciarra revenge game where he got let go at Penn State as offensive coordinator after only a single season. It fits the narrative of a trap game, but my expectation is that I don't think it's going to be a trap game for them. I don't think they're going to overlook the Gophers. The Gophers consistently have been pretty good. I think it'll be a good contest in general.
When was the last time Minnesota won at Penn State?
I don't know. I remember the last time they should have won at Penn State and missed tackle.
You mean Kunle Ayinde against Saquon Barkley in the hole?
Yeah, that was bad.
That was a decision.
The other narrative here is like the super old quarterback game, like Tanner Morgan and Sean Clifford. Like,
God, that's been all. You're right.
Yeah.
By the way, the last time Minnesota won at Penn State was in 2003.
Oh, that's a while ago.
They've only done it twice in the history of the two games, the two teams here. So that's interesting.
I wonder if Jay Sovell ever wakes up in the middle of the night and just sees Saquon Barkley.
Kunle Ayinde versus Saquon Barkley to win the game. My God, what a decision there.
Yeah.
And then finally, Luke, it almost happened for you. It almost did.
Oh, but so
Rob
close.
Rob Smith is no longer the defensive coordinator at Rutgers. He was let go. And, oh, by the way, it's another former Gopher assistant comes back into town. It's on October the 29th. Minnesota plays Rutgers, and it's going to be Kirk Sciarra versus Joe Harris-Simiak, who is now the defensive coordinator at Rutgers. He was the co-defensive coordinator for Minnesota this past year. There are so many former recent Gopher coaches that Minnesota's going to be involved with this year. It's kind of insane, to be honest.
And I think this might be – I think this is the only transfer where I don't think any other Gopher transfers went to a team that the Gophers play other than Rutgers, where Curtis Dunlop ended up.
We'll get to that. And also, it'll be, I guess, if you want to go revenge game for players, it's, yes, the Curtis Dunlap revenge game, but it's also the Mayan Ahanotu.
Oh,
played very briefly for Minnesota. So it's an interesting October. It's 4 games plus a bye week, but
I said this,
again, you get 2 of those at home and 2 of those on the road, which I don't know that you can complain there.
No, and I said this to you, but does it not feel like Rutgers just like takes Minnesota sloppy seconds? Like,
jeez. You're gonna figure out a better way to kind of put that. I mean, you can. I mean, I don't blame them.
Like,
for the success
they're
that
good,
Minnesota's
but like,
had in the last
it's,
two,
it's like
years.
That's where they poach, and I know that they have a lot of connections. Given the Kirk or not the Kirk Sciarra, the Greg Schiano connection to PJ Fleck and everything, like they have connections, but it just feels like, they elevated them. Maybe sloppy seconds is a bad way to put it in terms of because in a lot of senses, like they didn't force these guys out except for Rob Smith, right? But
Jim Panagos didn't get his. didn't get his, I don't believe his contract renewed. Oh, Minnesota's okay. D-line coach for like a, I think a season back in 2019. Yeah.
But can we just real quickly, like, just, I'm so impressed with Rob Smith and his ability to continue to get jobs. That man can hustle.
So he's now the defensive coordinator at Duke, which makes absolutely no sense.
Ryan, he's not like, you know, going to be a quality control like position. He's getting legit D coordinator positions again and again and again. I think he did get one. I think there was one season off that he was maybe with the Patriots, but still, come on.
It's wild, ain't it? Because it's like Joe Rossi gets let go as the defensive coordinator from Rutgers. He has to be a quality control guy here at Minnesota before a position coach, before a defensive coordinator. Now, obviously, everybody loves him now. But it's like Rob Smith, I mean, Joe Rossi, objectively in any sort of way, is much better than whatever you think of Rob Smith. Yet Rob Smith continues to land on his feet. The only other thing I would note here in the October schedule, Luke, is that Illinois game. Minnesota gets a bye week to prepare, but the Fighting Illini will be coming off games the two previous weeks against Wisconsin and Iowa. So it seemingly bodes pretty well there for your Golden Gopher squad, Luke.
Yeah, on paper, that makes sense. It does. Okay, let's get into November. Minnesota starts off on the road against Nebraska on November 5th. What's the over-under that Scott Frost is still the coach?
I mean, if we're going to – I am very intrigued to see this Nebraska team because they have – it's going to look a lot different, especially a quarterback.
Well, but the thing is, I don't think quarterback was the problem previously. Like, you can make – maybe Adrian Martinez was the problem, but I don't really buy that.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of this. I mean, they've got a brand-new offensive coordinator from Pitt. They've got a couple of new quarterbacks, one by the name of – Chuba Purdy, which, if that doesn't sound like a Nebraska quarterback name, and Chuba Purdy, I don't really know what may be. I think they also landed another quarterback. I'm trying to find. Yeah, Casey Thompson, who is the starter at Texas. So it's going to look a little bit different over there. But to your point, is this the year that they can finally not have Scott Frost Day be before the end of May? Can Nebraska finally get to a bowl game?
Yeah.
I have no idea. It's going to be interesting because, I mean, it's now or never for Scott Frost. Yep. And is Minnesota going to be another team that Minnesota beats them and it's the nail in the proverbial coffin? Because it's been that way for a couple of different Nebraska coaches in recent memory, Luke. So that November 5th game was supposed to be on the road at Michigan State. Now they're going to travel on the road to Lincoln.
Let's keep in mind, too, that they have made a number of staff changes. They fired basically their entire offensive staff, but they did also bring in a special teams coordinator. Kudos to them, something that they had lacked.
I wonder if he recruits unlike the guy that Minnesota has. Oh, geez.
Okay.
What's gonna happen?
November 12th, home against Northwestern.
That actually stayed the same, which is about the only thing that did stay the same on the entire schedule in terms of Big Ten-wise.
Let's keep in mind, too, that Northwestern, if history serves, they're going to be pretty good this year because they tend to be win the Big Ten West absolutely terrible, win the Big Ten West absolutely terrible. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but there's some precedent.
I think Northwestern's going to be dreadful again.
Yeah, probably.
They don't have a quarterback. Who are they going to throw the ball to? They lost their best defensive player in Brandon Joseph to Notre Dame. Lost a couple other transfers to the SEC. I think Northwestern's going to be god-awful again. And I would note that Northwestern's two games now, prior to when they play Minnesota, Ohio State and Iowa. So, I don't know what kind of position they're going to be in coming into Minneapolis. And then the final two games of the year, it's going to be a whopper. It is home against Iowa for Senior Day and for the Pig, of which PJ Fleck, as we all know, 0-5 against Iowa. It was supposed to be on the road at Penn State, but now it is going to be Senior Day against Iowa. Luke, what do you think?
I mean, boy, I like ending with your two kind of like marquee opponents in the Big Ten West. I think the storylines kind of write themselves if Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin are the ones that are going to contend for the Big Ten West as it has been the last couple of years. I like ending like this, but it is a tough ending. There's no question about it. But you know what? Every game is tough in the Big Ten. I for the most part, I don't really care who the opponent is.
Well, I would note that it's, I mean, there's going to be a lot of emotions that day because can Fleck finally get the monkey off his back? It's senior day. I can assure you there's probably going to be Big Ten West implications on the line as well. So, Luke, I know you were wondering, because I was, who does the Fighting Kirk Ferentzes have the 2 weeks prior to Minnesota there in early November? They have Wisconsin and they have Purdue.
Okay.
So one of them is the team that has figured out how to consistently in the recent memory beat Kirk Ferentz. And the other one has also had their number. So I was another team where I don't really know what to expect there because their quarterbacks are awful. They lost Tyler Goodson. They lost Tyler Linderbaum.
Yep.
They get back Riley Moss, which is obviously very good for them, but it's just like, can they have the amount of turnover luck that they did for so many different games? And just, is this one of the years where it's going to be Iowa wins 7 or 8 games? Now, I'm sure I'll get into a heated debate about that on the Eyes on Big Ten podcast, but I just can't see Iowa winning double-digit games again with that offense just is so bad. It's so bad, but
yeah.
They also put up 27 on Minnesota somehow.
Yeah, you got to give their coaches credit because they find ways, you know, to keep them into the game even when their offense was bad, right? And they're willing to make sometimes the necessary adjustments, like putting in, I think it's Padilla or Paeta, I can't remember the quarterback's name.
It's Padilla.
Padilla, Spencer. Yeah. And then yes, Padilla, it's, and then, it's spent, and then Petras, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So with Petras, like, I will go to my grave saying Minnesota wins that game 9 times out of 10 if they start Petras, because he would have been sacked 5, maybe 6 times. Padilla was absolutely the perfect move. He was more mobile, and then they took chances and won, right? And at the end of the day, that's what that coaching staff does, is they find the ways, even with deficiencies, to put their team in a good position. And they do that through special teams and defense, and they're opportunistic. And at the end of the day, Minnesota just hasn't found a way to beat them. And it's kudos mostly to that staff, in my opinion.
I will be very curious to see what the win over under totals are that come out, I think, in like 5-6 months or whenever it is, because I can probably tell you if I was like 8.5, I'm gonna do the same thing. And then I bet you Minnesota's probably around 7.5, and
yeah,
I'd probably take the over.
We'll get into this, I'm sure, but you know, there are many question marks around Minnesota as well. Like, we're not gonna concede that fact. Okay, let's talk a little bit Wisconsin. Wisconsin obviously loses, you know, arguably the best linebacker we've maybe seen in the Big Ten in quite some
time. Thank God. I don't know why that was even a decision for him. Was Leo Chanel and Jack Sanborn are gone, which thank God, because Leo Chanel was an absolute monster. He was fantastic.
He was great. I will probably forever remember that play when he ran down Bucky Irving. Like, yeah, what a play by that guy.
Well, the funniest part about that one was, to me, like, I asked Bucky, like, we got him in availability in late December. And I was like, did you, once you made the safety miss against Wisconsin, did you think you were going to get caught from behind? And he goes, hell no. I'm like, yeah. And Bucky, you're probably the fastest running back Minnesota has, but Chanel literally just sprinted immediately once he saw Bucky catch it down the field 30 yards. And that's a hell of a motor. Like, Leo Chanel is a fantastic linebacker. And I'm very glad that he is no longer going to be for the Wisconsin Badgers, but this is the other game that stayed the same. So you're on the road in Madison. Minnesota's won 2 of the last 4 against Wisconsin. And oh, by the way, can you guess the 2 teams that Wisconsin has to play prior to the Axe?
I'll go with Ohio State and Iowa.
It is Iowa and Nebraska.
Okay.
So it is going to be a November to remember for Nebraska, because they are going to have some brutal Big Ten West games. So you have 2 home and 2 away in both October and November for Minnesota, which I think, I don't know how you can look at that and think, well, it's a lot. I think it's a lot better than what it used to be, is what I'll say.
I like the flow of the schedule a lot more. I don't like having it so front loaded. I'm 100% with you.
And I like how you, like, in November, you're going to know, like, it's just a brutal West. It's West versus West everywhere. There's not like a random Big Ten East game in here from Minnesota.
Yeah. I like that.
It's
too.
Iowa, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Northwestern. It's going to be interesting. So it's, I like the changes.
Yeah.
I think, like you said, the flow is better, and I think just schedule the way it all kind of works out makes a lot more sense to me.
All right, Ryan, before we talk coaches, you cover this stuff very, very well on Gopher Illustrated, and we're going to talk about the changes that happened with the coaching staff. But if somebody wanted to not wait for Gopher Gridiron Radio, how could they actually read about all these coaching changes, maybe who might be the next assistant coaches? What's the background? What's the inside intel that you're getting?
Well, I think I would say, and I hate to toot my own horn, which I actually do. I hate talking about myself, but I talked about Greg Harbaugh before it was announced. I talked about Danny Collins before it was announced. I mentioned Brick Haley's name 2 days before it was announced. I broke the Clay Patterson news. I broke the Chad Wilt news. I'd like to think I'm pretty plugged in. And if you want to know all that info before I put it on the Twitter machine, or we talk about it here on the podcast, you can join Gopher Illustrated. It's $1 for your first 30 days. Or what I would recommend is doing an annual, which it's 30% off right now. Plus you get Paramount Plus in there. But if you want to wait about a week, I believe, I think it's going to be January the 27th is when the deal kicks off. For new members only.
Can I just mention how clutch the Paramount Plus thing's been of late?
Oh, I have been binge watching Bull.
I haven't been watching that, but my son, as you know, is affluent in two languages. Really loves Bob the Builder in Spanish, and you can get that on.
That is Paramount the Plus. Most. What a flex by you, Luke! As the dad, that's such a dad flex there. That
dude,
your three-year-old son is fluent in two different languages already. Where I am still struggling from my years of college. In terms of learning Spanish. Sick flex, Luke. Thanks for that.
No, but it was like he wanted to watch Bob the Builder, and he likes it in Spanish more than he likes it in English. I'm not particularly sure why. Maybe there's some content that I don't understand and that he doesn't want me to know about. But generally speaking, I was able to get him via Paramount Plus onto Bob the Builder. So thank you, Gopher Illustrated, for that, and make sure that you you check it out, folks.
Yeah. So that's where, again, I think January the 27th until the second signing day, we're going to be doing for new members only like a 60% off for new members annual. You're saving, I don't know, 60, 70 bucks. So if you like the podcast and you want to make sure that I'm supported and I have a job, we would greatly appreciate you, Luke.
Yeah. So let's talk about the new coaches. Let's first talk about departures. I think this is something that often gets overlooked. People often look at Minnesota and just look at the fact that, hey, guys are leaving for other jobs. And it's like, yes, sure, that's partly a problem. But in this situation, basically everybody got a promotion, right? And that's just something that you have a finite number of spots on your roster in terms of coaches that you can have. And everyone can't be the defensive coordinator. Everyone can't be the passing game coordinator, right? Like, so these guys took better opportunities for them. They have to do what's better for themselves. As we talked about earlier, because you can lose a job and become a quality control person. And all of a sudden you're down like an order to the magnitude of salary. So, kudos to these guys and kudos to Fleck in terms of building his coaching tree. I don't really love that term, but there isn't a better one in terms of guys that are continuing to get promotions. And he has continually found a way to replace them with pretty solid folks, Ryan.
Yeah. And that's where I think if you look at the changes, and we'll go position by position here, kind of the changes of what happened. But in previous years, I look back to like the 2019 year where Jim Panagos left for Rutgers. And Rod Chance left to go to Oregon. They took the same position at a different school. And in those instances, I can tell you from talking with people very familiar with those two coaches' thinkings, it was about the money. They got six-figure increases to go elsewhere to a similar position. So then, yes, it was about the money. Now, when you look at the recent ones, two of the guys are now defensive coordinators in the Big Ten, and the other one is now a passing game coordinator in the Pac-12, something he wasn't here at Minnesota. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And from knowing some of these guys pretty well, in Clay Patterson, Chad Wilt, and Joe Harris-Semiak, it wasn't about the money in this instance, which, again, I've made a lot of fuss and I've raised in a tizzy about, you know, the assistant pay at Minnesota, which we'll get into here in a bit. But, like, in this instance, it wasn't about the money, which is the point I'm trying to make here. So we've already touched on the offensive coordinator change, but I just want to kind of run through some of these a little bit where it's Mike Sanford, no longer your offensive coordinator. He's the offensive coordinator at Colorado. You'll see his offense come to Huntington Bank Stadium in mid-September, and now Kirk Schrock is in. So Kenny Burns remains here, which I would tell you, a little inside intel would be that Kenny was a serious contender for the Temple job and for the Nevada job. Didn't end up getting it, but I don't know how much longer that Kenny Burns is going to be a Minnesota position coach, which is unfortunate because I think we can both agree the way he handled the running back room this year with the amount of injuries was fantastic. But Kenny Burns is still here. Matt Simon's still your receivers coach. And the first change in recent memory here is Clay Patterson has accepted a job and he is now the tight ends coach and passing game coordinator at Colorado. Now, that doesn't surprise me one bit. When Kirk Shiraka came back, I think it's been kind of assumed whether it's I've been telling you that or I don't know where else you've been hearing it, but seemingly I think Matt Simon is the guy in behind Kirk where
he's the heir apparent.
Yes, and that's where what was the ceiling going to be for Clay now?
Right.
Because he knows that Matt's probably going to be the guy. Kirk's back. He's probably not going anywhere for a couple of years. So what's the ceiling for him and his job? He's been the tight ends coach. He wants to be more involved. And with his contract coming up here, or it came to fruition, you know, he took a job and he joins up with Sanford becoming the passing game coordinator at Colorado. So, you know, it stinks because I love Clay as a person. I think he did a really good job with Cokeheath. And you talk to any of those guys in the tight end room and they would take a bullet for Clay Patterson. But it's the reality of the situation is Clay wanted an opportunity to move up in the college football world. And that ceiling was hard to get through with Kirk Shiraka coming back and Matt Simon remaining on the staff. So, I mean, you understand how I'm trying to – what I'm trying to say here is
– yeah.
You get what I'm trying to say, Luke, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the reality is that's like anybody in any job situation. I think fans too often are, you know, they don't look at these as careers for people and they feel like, you know, you have to be loyal to this team. No, it's like they want to move up in their career. The thing is like, just like you, it often means you have to move positions and move companies for that to happen. And in the case of Clay, like there was no upward mobility any further from what he saw. And the only way it was going to happen was going elsewhere. And you know what? That happens all the time, no matter the industry.
So the new tight end coach at the University of Minnesota is Greg Harbaugh Jr. It's not Harbaugh. He is in no relation to khaki pants. He is in no relation to the head coach of the University of Michigan or his brother at the Baltimore Ravens. And by the way, it is pronounced Harbaugh, not Harbaugh. I've already been yelled at about that. So from what I've heard, Kirk Shiraka had a big hand in this. So Harbaugh worked with Shiraka in his time at Western Michigan. And he also worked with Shiraka in his time here at the University of Minnesota. I believe he was a quality control guy in the 2019 season, for Minnesota, and then he was also held a lot of different kind of titles at Western Michigan for Kirk Shiraka for a couple years, and he was at Western Michigan most recently for the last 2 years as their wide receivers coach, and now he's going to be coaching tight ends here at the University of Minnesota. But I know Shiraka had a big hand in here, and I think the question I have is that tight end room's going to look a lot different. You no longer have Cokeheath, who's off to the NFL. Nnamdi Adeyemi-Ajimere is no longer there, which makes a ton of sense to me because that fit just didn't make any sense after a couple of years of watching him. But it's Brevin Spanford, and then what? Because there's a lot of high hopes for Jameson Gears, who internally within the program they call Baby Gronk. You still have YZ's Nick Caller up there that I think will be on scholarship here sooner than later. You'll have Nathan Jones coming into that room. But my question is on the recruiting side of things because I think Clay did a pretty good job. I mean, you don't get Cade McConnell without Clay Patterson. Now we'll see what Cade McConnell ends up developing into here in a couple of years. But I think that's going to be the question for a lot of these hires I have, Luke, is what is the recruiting impact?
Because I mean, that's your job. So,
I mean, yes, but I think, you know, there's skepticism because they just haven't done it. Like Greg Harbaugh has only really been a position coach for 2 years and he was a wide receivers coach at Western Michigan. And you can look back and see who he got and who he didn't, but it's also a MAC school, and it's also it's not comparing apples and oranges to me. So I'm going to be very curious to see what Harbaugh is able to get done in the recruiting trail. You still have Brian Callahan as your offensive line coach. And then we switch to the defensive side of the ball, Luke. And your guy Chad Wilt is now the Indiana defensive coordinator. How about that, huh?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, that was a little bit of a surprise for me. But, you know, I think he did a good job. He did a good job. I think he was at Cincinnati ahead of that, right? Like, I mean, he's earned this opportunity, and good for him. My question is, like, yeah, I get that it's a promotion and title, but how much control is he really going to have with Tom Allen as the head coach? Like, that's Tom Allen's defense. So, like, I understand.
You're such a cynic.
I'm a cynic in this situation because I just don't think it's that great a move for him. But again, I don't know that much.
Here's what I tell you. He's got family connections to Indiana in terms of the state of Indiana. And again, he still has the title of defensive coordinator, which Joe Rossi's, and again, I think we all can agree outside of Luke Buehr that signing Joe Rossi to a 2-year extension made a lot of sense for Minnesota having a top 15 defense. Now, I know it's much to the chagrin of Luke Buehr, but these guys wanted an opportunity to potentially move up. And that's where if Tom Allen in Indiana calls you and says, hey, will you come be my defensive coordinator? There are only 14 defensive coordinators in the Big Ten. And Chad Wilk gets to be among them now.
Good for him, right?
He gets a title raise. And again, it's about a career advancement. It's not about the money, which I'm sure, you know, he'll make a little bit more money there. But I can tell you from maybe knowing a little bit more behind the scenes details, it's more so about I'm going to be a Big Ten defensive coordinator now. I get to, you know, go back to Indiana. So it's about career advancement. It's about a different title. Again, Chad Wilt hasn't stayed at places for much longer than what he did at Minnesota. I think two years is about the norm for him before he moves on to his next advancement. And again, congrats to Chad Wilt. I mean, he actually unlocks Asezio Tomiwu. He gets Boye Mafe playing well. You know, he's able to grab Niles Pinckney from the portal. He's able to develop him. He's able to help develop D'Angelo Carter. And I mean, I can't blame him at all. I mean, I got a lot of good memories of Chad Wilt. So replacing him is going to be a guy who has about as much experience in the college football world as I do have years on this earth. And that is, and if it's a very apropos name, Luke, the man's name is Brick Haley.
Yeah.
That isn't a man whose name doesn't scream defensive line coach at some level. I don't know what does. So what you need to know about Brick Haley is that he has coached at some pretty prestigious places here in the last 10, 15 years. Was the defensive line coach for the Chicago Bears in the late 2000s. Was the defensive line coach at LSU for about 5-6 years from 2009 to 2014. I think a lot of people remember Daniil Hunter. He's the one who recruited Daniil Hunter. He was the D-line coach at Texas for a couple of years. Was the D-line coach at Missouri for 3-4 years. And then most recently, he was a defensive analyst at North Carolina this past season. So I am going to be very curious to see with Brick Haley, number one, how he can continue to develop Minnesota's young defensive line core that's also being held together by some defensive line transfers, which we'll get to. But, I mean, this is a guy that's got a lot of experience, Luke, and I hope that he's up to the task in year 29 or year 30 of coaching college football in terms of in the recruiting department.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, to always get a new fresh face in that you're not familiar with and learn, you know, what their strengths, what their weaknesses are. And then also, you know, how they recruit. So I'm curious to see over the next couple of months to see how he gets plugged in. Obviously, he's had some success and put some guys in the NFL, most recently having been at Missouri. But man, I think this is one of the fun things about it. Like, you know, a year ago, I didn't have a clue who Chad Wilt was. And all of a sudden, I have the utmost respect for him for what he was able to do, how he was able to recruit, etc. And now we get another swing at it with a new defensive line coach. This is a position, though, Ryan, that has seen a lot of turnover during the Fleck time period. If you're real concerned, like, oh, well, we lost Chad Wilt, it's like, well, we've basically lost a D-line a defensive line coach almost every year.
Yes. And I would note that you mentioned just getting new blood into it. As far as I've heard, like, Minnesota didn't really have a ton of connections to Brick Haley. They just kind of, it wasn't like a Greg Harbaugh type of thing where it's not what you know, it's who you know. This one was absolutely about, this is what you know. And Minnesota kind of went to the, you know, who's available, even if we might not know him. And it sounds like he interviewed really well. And I would imagine that Haley is going to have the recruiting area of Texas, and I'm hoping that he also has got some connections in that Missouri area where he was for 4 or 5 years, because I think that's an area in the St. Louis / Kansas City kind of area that's got some talent in it. You've also got Joe Rossi, who's going to be back coaching linebackers. Paul Haynes is back. He's going to be coaching the corners. And then Joe Harris-Simiak, we mentioned it earlier, he is now the defensive coordinator at Rutgers. And that makes a lot of sense to me, because yes, Joe Rossi signs a new gig. Joe Harris-Simiak finished up number two to Mo Lindquist last year for the Buffalo head coaching job. He's very highly thought of out there in the industry. And when the opportunity came to become a Big Ten defensive coordinator, yeah, he's going to take it, especially with Rossi signing that two-year deal. So replacing him is a guy that I know Rossi likes quite a bit. And he's going to be the new nickel and safeties coach, just like Harris-Simiak was. And his name is Danny Collins. And I feel really, I don't know how I should feel, Luke. He's 29. I'm 29. He's now a position coach at a Big Ten school, and I'm currently sitting in my upstairs office recording a podcast. This is my full-time gig. So two different career paths, certainly. But, you know, from what I've been told, you know, Danny Collins has been with them a long time, and I know that. I mean, he's been with Flex since the Western Michigan days. He's done a ton of different roles. Most recently here, he was a quality control guy for Minnesota, and I can assure you Rossi values his opinion, especially in game planning, immensely. I mean, I would imagine it probably goes Joe Harris-Simiak with somebody who leaned on a ton, but I've heard Danny Collins is absolutely up there. Now, for Danny Collins, it's going to be, he's never been a position coach before. So how does he respond to that?
Right.
Both on the field and then off the field with recruiting, because Joe Harris-Simiak, I'd argue, was Minnesota's best recruiter. Now, I'm not expecting Danny Collins to fill those shoes, and I'm not. I want to make sure expectations are set there, but I want to see a lot of energy and effort from him. I want to be able to see that, you know, he is not going to be the Rob Wenger of this coaching staff where it's just a complete L in recruiting. And I expect Danny to go balls to the walls in terms of energy and effort. I think he's going to have some of the same areas that Joe Harris-Simiak did in Iowa and kind of the different areas around Missouri, but I mean, I think Minnesota's recruited well at the defensive back, or I should say the safety in the nickel spot. And we also obviously saw Jordan Howden and Tyler Newbin get a lot better this past season. Justice Harris was improved. So he's going to have some different kind of bodies to work with there. And I'll be very curious to see a year from now what we're saying about Danny Collins.
Yeah. Okay.
I think. Oh, by the way, as far as I know, Rob Wenger's back, which his contract was up. And I don't know officially if it's renewed. I know he's out on the road recruiting. I requested a couple days ago contracts from the University of Minnesota to kind of see what's going on there. But I think the thing I would note here, Luke, before we kind of transition off, is money.
Okay.
Because here's what I would say is Kirk Schrock is actually going to be making less money than Mike Sanford was. You remember 2 years ago how Kirk Schrock was set to make over $1 million as the offensive coordinator here?
Yep, I do recall that.
He's going to be making $625,000 this year.
Still not small. Not.
No, it's obviously not peanuts. But Sanford was going to make, I think, $675,000 or $700,000. I'm going somewhere with this, I promise. You also have, you know, Clay Patterson wasn't making a ton of money, but I can't imagine that Greg Harbaugh is going to be making any more money than what Clay Patterson was. I mean, we're talking about Chad Wilt, who is making 300 something thousand. I don't know that Brick Haley is going to be making any more than that, probably a little less. And then I can't see Danny Collins making any more than what Joe Harris-Simiak was making. He's probably going to be making 50, 75K less. And why I mention this is because in a couple weeks, in the latest Fleck extension, he got $350,000 extra dollars to play around with. So where is that money going in this assistant pool? Now, I also can go to like Garrett Chernoff and the recruiting staff to give them bumps. But what are you doing with this extra money is my question. Because the only guy that I could see, because Danny Collins isn't going to be making any more than Harris-Simiak. Harbaugh's not going to be making any more than Clay Patterson. I would be shocked if Brick Haley's making more than what Chad Wilt did. So what are you doing with all the money? And I swear to all that is holy, if it's just, again, I'm not saying some of these guys don't, like Matt Simon and, you know, Brian Callahan and Kenny Burns don't deserve bumps, but you're not going to give them like 80K bumps because why? So I am going to be very curious to see, once I get a hold of these contracts, what it all kind of looks like, because you got some money to spend and I don't know where they're going to be spending it, but we're going to find out.
Yeah, it will be very interesting to see where that money is allocated. And again, we often talk about one of the things that Minnesota has to compete against is not just facilities, but also assistant pool money, right? And where they rack and stack against the competition in the Big Ten. So it'll be interesting where it's allocated and where they end up for this 2022 season against their competition. Okay, I think to round this off, we need to talk a little bit about the transfer portal. Who's in, who's out. I know that at one point we've already paused this podcast because there was another transfer portal commit. But you know,
anytime I'm doing anything like just, it's so funny whether I'm out in the woods or out on a boat or like recording a podcast, and seemingly that's when commitments break. But here we are.
Yeah, so why don't we get to the breaking commitment, the D tackle out of Harvard?
Yeah, Minnesota got another transfer commitment today here on the 19th from first team All Ivy Leagues, Chris Smith. He's a 1-year graduate transfer defensive tackle. He's going to be paired with a couple of other defensive linemen that we'll get to a little bit later. But I think Chris Smith's pretty good, man. I mean, you look at his Pro Football Focus grades. He's got 85-plus grades in the last two seasons he's played in. Heard from a source this past weekend. He was a legitimate 6'1.5" and over 300 pounds. And you watch the tape, and he's a guy that I think can fill kind of that Niles Pinckney type of role for Minnesota, where I think guys like Devin Eastern and Gage Keys and those type of guys maybe need another year to develop. And that's where I think Chris Smith is going to be able to help right away. And he's not going to be here until the summer. He's going to graduate from Harvard. So him and Quinn Carroll, who we'll get to here in a second, will be coming in the summer with the rest of the recruiting class. But I think Chris Smith is a pretty good get for Minnesota. I'll be curious to see what we rate him in terms of a star ranking at 24/7 here. But first team all Ivy League. I mean, the Pro Football Focus grades look, I mean, they look great. So it'll be interesting here. It'll be very interesting. Now,
I mean, and let's be completely honest. Like, they have a lot to fill on that defensive line with a number of people leaving.
This is
another good use of the transfer portal to kind of fill in, because they have some young guys that they're probably still pretty high on that just need some time, and this buys you some time.
Absolutely, it does. So, I just kind of want to go position by position.
Sure.
In terms of. So at quarterback, you'll remember that Zach Anixed and Jacob Clark hit the portal shortly after Tanner Morgan said he was coming back.
Yep.
Surprised no one.
Nope.
Well, I think what it does surprise some folks is that Zach Anixed will be going to Illinois State. And, oh, by the way, Illinois State now kicks off their season with the Wisconsin Badgers. So Illinois State is an FCS school in the Missouri Valley Conference. And, oh, by the way, Jacob Clark will also be going to the Missouri Valley at the FCS Institution of Missouri State. Now, it's funny reading the Twitter machine that when those two hit the portal, people are saying, well, you know what? They're going to go to another Big Ten team and they're going to kill the Gophers. And look, here's what I would tell you is, how in the world, if you are an opposing program, are you going to evaluate Zach Anixed and Jacob Clark? Because they have absolutely no tape for years. You have none. And you look across the portal and there are plentiful options of proven quarterbacks everywhere.
Right.
So, yeah, these guys are going to have to go to the FCS. They're going to have to prove themselves. But I hope those two give the Bison a run for their money.
I think I do want to say this, though, is, like, generally speaking, I think there's this kind of common misconception that just because you go on the portal, like you're getting at, Ryan, you're going to instantly be able to either upgrade or start at, you know, an equal school. And the fact is, like, they don't have that tape, like you're saying. But we also don't know that it's going to be such a great decision for all these folks going down, because if they want to transfer again, they're going to have to sit out. So I still think this is a very fluid situation with the transfer portal, and we're still in the very early days of what it's going to look like long term.
Correct. So those two found destinations. Minnesota didn't take a transfer quarterback. At the running back position, I don't know that I have a ton of time to talk about Kai Thomas and that whole thing, but the bowl game MVP, Kai Thomas, obviously hits the portal. He's going to be going to Kansas. And I just think it's funny. You know, there were some tampering things going on between or that are in the process of hopefully being resolved here soon between Minnesota and Kansas State with Kai Thomas. Minnesota turned Kansas State in for tampering with Kai Thomas, and Kansas State never got involved because maybe there's some smoke, Kansas State fans, to some of the tampering charges. Now, it sucks because, I mean, if I was going to make a list of guys that hurt, it hurts Minnesota that they're leaving, I think Kai Thomas would probably be number one. And now,
why do you think that hurts him?
Well, I think Kai Thomas is really good. I think he has a chance to be pretty good. I mean, the only two guys that I would legitimately say, like, this hurts the team next year are Kai Thomas and MJ Anderson.
Okay. I thought you meant individually. So you're saying the team.
Yes.
Okay. Good clarification.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And that's where, like, Kai's a great talent. I think we all know that. You know, I think he's going to do really well at Kansas. He gets closer to home. You know, I would tell you that from talking with the Thomas side of things, you know, it's all about the right fit. And it just wasn't the right fit here. And I think when Mo Ibrahim coming back and Bucky showing well and the possibility of Trey Potts coming back along with Bryce Williams, I don't know that there was as many carries as the Thomases would have wanted. And he can definitely get that at Kansas. He can get closer to home. But again, it's just about the fit. And I wish nothing but the best for Kai Thomas. And then you also have Cam Wiley, who hit the portal midseason. He's going to be joining up with your guy, Winston Delighty-Boudaire, at Akron. Winston is now the defensive line coach out there. So Cam Wiley's to the MAC.
Do you remember when he came in and you asked me to try to pronounce his name for the first time?
Oh, I think it was the development. It was the first time the bit actually happened.
I think that is the first time the bit happened. Man, Winston, you made a bit into a reality. I have this, I don't even know what to call it, but I have this perception online that I can't read, which is maybe accurate or inaccurate as it comes to names that I'm unfamiliar with. But man, that started it all. What a flashback. What a great dude too. Just in general, just a solid human. It'll be a great opportunity for Cam and probably a better fit from a level perspective.
Absolutely. So, in Minnesota has not taken a transfer running back. I know there have been some questions about that. And what I would say is this, I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota explores the transfer market, but not until after spring ball. And why I say that is they're going to know a lot more about where's Mo Ibrahim at in his injury comeback. Is Trey Potts actually an option at running back? I think they'll know a lot more in 4 months in terms of he's going to be medically cleared again. Where's Bryce Williams at in his serious leg injury coming back? You know, if like Trey Potts can't come back, then I think Minnesota would explore potentially taking a transfer running back because you'd be looking at for next year after the 22 season, Mo's gone. You could have Bryce Williams come back. We'll see what happens with Trey Potts, but it's Zach Evans and Bucky Irving. So we'll kind of cross that bridge when it comes to it. Receiver Brady Boyd, to the shock of absolutely no one, is going to Texas Tech. You'll remember him playing in a few games this past season. So Brady Boyd's dad was the offensive coordinator at one point for the Texas Tech head coach. You think maybe there are some things being talked about behind the scenes there, Luke?
I would suspect as much. Also, like, I'm kind of bummed to see him go. He had a nice spring game and looked like kind of one of those gamers that you like to have, one of those possession receivers. Bummer to see him go, but it makes a lot of sense.
It does. So he's gone to the portal. I don't know what you want to call Nnamdi Adeem Ejimeor, but it never clicked here. Whether you want to call him a receiver, whether you want to call him a tight end, you know, had a great offer list and legitimate offers at that, and it just never clicked here. Never played in 3 years, and now he's going to be going to, I believe, Central Arkansas.
Can we just go back to signing day? And by the way, hopefully they have a signing day social again, you know, the big one at night, but I remember Fleck talking about him where he was like all conference at tackle and then like his freshman year and then wide receiver. It was the most perplexing thing. I just like was dumbfounded. And then all of a sudden it's like maybe my dumbfoundedness was merited given he never played.
Yeah, it was, it was a strange deal. So he's now going to be going to Central Arkansas. Austin Henderson, another tight end that hit the portal, he's going to be going to Liberty. And then you also have Dylan McGill, who is a guy that Minnesota took it on a maroon shirt back in the, I think, the 21 class. He was a scholarship kid. He's going to be going
to define maroon shirt again for the listeners. I don't think everybody knows what a maroon shirt is.
Yeah, so it's like a Logan Richter type of situation where, you know, they don't sign until the following January, but they are on scholarship. So that's kind of the situation there. He's going to be going to, I believe, Pittsburgh State, the same place that Keontae Harden actually ended up back in the day.
Sure.
I think it's
sure.
a D2 school in the Kansas area. So Minnesota didn't take a wide receiver transfer, even though they've been definitely looking at their options. They did not take a tight end or a tight end transfer outside of a walk-on from Iowa Western by the name of Frank Bierman, which if you're going to take a guy or a tight end, his last name better be Bierman for all the connections, obviously, to the University of Minnesota. And then it gets weird on the offensive line a little bit. So guys transferring out, Curtis Dunlap, he is going to be going to Rutgers. We mentioned it earlier, again, kind of the weird situation there where he quit midseason for the second time. I will be very curious to see what Curtis Dunlap does at Rutgers because it just never really clicked here. I mean, you know, the zenith for Curtis Dunlap was definitely that Auburn game where he played really well. But it just every other game outside of that was just so inconsistent. And now he's got the ability to do it. Is his weight going to be under control? That's another question I have. But Curtis Dunlap ended up at Rutgers. You also have Sia Mapitakolo.
Okay, the guy Ryan. Is that it? Is that how you pronounce it?
Not a chance. But I don't have to say his name again after this podcast. You'll remember him being the guy on the sidelines last year where it looked like, who is the guy with the big hair? And he looks like he's about 220 pounds. Sounds like he's going to be taking a preferred walk-on at Arizona. And that's an interesting move. But, you know, more power to him there. And then you look at the offensive line transfers into Minnesota. And I would definitely trade Quinn Carroll for or I would trade Sia for Quinn Carroll. And I would definitely trade Curtis Dunlap for Chuck Filiaga. So let's talk about Quinn Carroll. The former top prospect, and I think it was the 2019 class, he went to Notre Dame for three seasons, has a pretty serious knee injury in 2019, really doesn't end up playing too many snaps. I think a total of like 40 or 50 in his time there for the Fighting Irish. And he is going to be transferring back to Minnesota now. And he's going to have... this is like a Benjamin St. Juice situation where he's going to graduate from Notre Dame in the spring, be on campus at Minnesota in the summer, and he's going to have 3 years of eligibility somehow to get his master's.
Interesting.
So the question I have for Quinn Carroll is, I think it's an easy take for Minnesota, whether it's because he's hashtag one of us, whether it's because there's an obvious need for immediate depth or starting ability on the offensive line. But what position is Quinn Carroll?
Right.
Is he a tackle off that knee injury where I already had some kind of question marks about how athletic is he? Or is he a guard? Well, luckily for Minnesota, Luke, they were losing both of their guards and both of their tackles. So I will be very curious over summer workouts and into fall camp, what positions that Brian Callahan is Quinn Carroll working at.
Let's just go back, though, and think, like, to your point, it doesn't really matter because, like, they lose somebody like Blaze Andres that basically played every position on center, right? And if he has that flexibility, great. I'm not projecting that he does, but it's like they're going to be able to fit him in just about anywhere. It's just where they do fit him in, right? So
Right. And so he played in the limited snaps that he did see the field at right tackle at Notre Dame. I could see him at guard or tackle there. I mean, I could see him challenging J.J. Gaudet at right tackle. I could see him challenging XYZ guy at right guard. And then Minnesota also took Chuck Filiaga, who is a graduate transfer, 1 year of eligibility remaining guard from the University of Michigan, who played in 39 career games for the Wolverines. He started every single game in 2020 for them at guard. He started, I believe, four games-ish for Michigan this past season. I think, again, it's a no-brainer take. He's a former Army All-American, former top 150 overall prospect. He ended up getting beat out by some different guys towards the end of the season here this year for Michigan. But we're talking about a Michigan offensive line unit, Luke, that just won the Joe Moore Award.
Yeah, exactly.
The best offensive line unit in college football, and he's a guy that had played a big part in that the last two seasons. Now, I'm not expecting him to come in and be, you know, a first-team all-conference guy, which he definitely has the ability to, but I think when you're looking to how does Minnesota figure it out on the interior of their offensive line outside of John Michael Schmitz, bringing in a 23-year-old that has played in 39 Big Ten games in his career and started, I think, half of them, makes a ton of sense to me. And the nice part is Chuck Filiaga is also already enrolled in classes. He'll be going through winter workouts, spring ball. I mean, Callahan's going to know exactly what he's got there with Filiaga, Luke.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to have that experience and depth. We saw what it brought on the defensive line last year, right? You think of like Niles Pinckney, right? That was able to come in from Clemson, kind of a similar situation, had one season to play. Love to have that kind of depth with that kind of experience come in. All in all, I think we have to acknowledge, unless you have other positions, Ryan, to go through, Minnesota's had, Did we hit all of them?
No, we got to hit defense. Yeah,
okay, let's keep going. I forgot. Do we got to get linebacker and secondary because we didn't get to the two corners?
But I would also note, like, if you're thinking offensive line transfer wise, or like I think Fleck would tell you, they were happy to get John Michael Schmitz back, and they were also thrilled to get Axel Rushmeier back.
Yeah,
because it was not a given here in the recent weeks that Axel Rushmeier was going to come back for his sixth year. So you are going to be a lot more. There's going to be a lot of competition on that offensive line. I mean, I think at left tackle, I'm still thinking it's probably going to be Ariante Ursary there, but at both guard spots, you have guys like Axel Rushmeier, Chuck Filiaga, Carter Shaw, the Utah State transfer Minnesota took last year. You can have Nathan Bowen there, maybe Tyler Cooper and Martez Lewis. And then at right tackle, I think it's going to be an interesting battle between J.J. Gaudet and Quinn Carroll there as well. So I think Minnesota knew they had depth. I don't know the depth problems, but like you're not going to turn down what was a four-star kid coming out of high school, in-state kid in Quinn Carroll. You're not going to turn down Chuck Filiaga. I think it makes a lot of sense. And then you talk defensive line-wise, you mentioned all the guys that are leaving, like Micah Dutreadway, Niles Pinckney, Val Martin, among others there at D-tackle. Well, I mentioned Chris Smith already. He'll be here this summer. I think he's probably the best of the three. But they also took a guy from Clemson who happened to be Niles Pinckney's roommate. By the way, small world, right?
Yeah.
So they took Darnell Jeffries, a Clemson defensive tackle. I think if you're looking for what kind of impact is he going to provide, I wouldn't put him on the Chris Smith level, but I'd say he's going to be better than what Val Martin provided here.
Okay.
He's going to have, I believe, 2 years of eligibility remaining. We'll see if he ends up exercising them both again. He was a highly sought-after kid coming out of high school. Didn't end up working out in terms of a lot of playing time at Clemson. And so Niles Pinckney vouched for him. They watched the limited tape that there is on him. And he's here for the spring semester. So he'll see him at spring ball. And then they took a graduate transfer defensive end from Vanderbilt by the name of Lorenzo Sergers. Now, he only really played in 1 year at Vanderbilt, and that was last season. Now, Vanderbilt is a terrible program in the SEC. They're very, very smart, but that's a terrible football program. So he's going to be tasked with probably competing against Jalen Logan Redding and Ja Joyner at that strong side defensive end that Asezio Tomi was leaving. So it'll be very interesting to kind of see how that all works out there at defensive line. But again, they take two guys that I think Chris Smith being the best of them. To kind of give these guys like Jacob Schuster and Devin Eastern and Gage Keys, Logan Richter, maybe another year to season.
It doesn't mean they can't play too, but maybe they can play in more spot duty. I think the thing that we have to keep in mind is that like throwing all kids into the wolves' den isn't always going to be successful, because there's this confidence component you always have to do. And if they're going to be, right, you know, not nearly as strong as the offensive line or defensive line they're going against, you know, that can really hamper them. So giving them these time and putting them in situations where they can be successful, you know, bodes well for them longer term. And I think that this is great that they've been able to identify some guys, and they've had some success doing this, at least on the defensive line, as we saw. And I don't hate this strategy. I actually really like this strategy and welcome it.
Yep. So you look at a couple of the destinations that former Gophers who hit the portal. MJ Anderson, I mentioned him earlier. I think that'll be a loss for Minnesota. But again, it was about the right fit and doing the things off the field the way that Fleck wants him. MJ Anderson ended up at Iowa State. And then Rashad Cheney, who played a little bit here and there this year, went to South Florida, where that leads me into my next guy. He is going to be teaming up with James Gordon, linebacker. Just, it didn't click for him here.
Yep.
It just, there were flashes. There were him getting just taken away at the second level there. It just didn't work out. So James Gordon hits the portal. He's going to be going to South Florida there. Minnesota did not take a linebacker there. And then I would also mention that, unfortunately, my second cousin, Jaquandus Burns, hit the portal after the bowl game. And he is going to be going back to Texas to play at SMU. And then that leads me to our final position, Luke, in the secondary. I think Minnesota did pretty well here.
You've mentioned that a couple times to me. And they took a slot corner and an outside corner, right?
Correct. So the outside corner has an absolutely elite first name, and Ryan. His name is Ryan Stapp. We talked about him, I think, a couple podcasts ago, but he is an outside corner from Abilene Christian. Jack Gibbons vouched for him quite a bit. He was second team all conference this past year at Abilene Christian. And you put on the tape, and this guy's maybe not the biggest guy in the world, but he is fast and he is physical and he is a lot of fun to watch. And Minnesota was able to get him over programs like Nebraska, Mississippi State. I think Tennessee was also involved there. So whether you want to look at the offer list or look at the tape, I think Ryan Stapp, when you look at who is going to be replacing Coney Durr, I think Ryan Stapp is going to give Terrell Smith everything he can for that outside corner position. And then without Justice Harris and without Bishop McDonald and in the slot there, Minnesota brought in Beanie Bishop, who is a first-team All-Conference USA this past season slot corner, someone that has got, I believe, 2 years of eligibility remaining. Same goes with Ryan Stapp. So not only are you getting proven secondary players for 1 year, Luke, they can also come back for another year if it doesn't, you know, if the NFL obviously doesn't call their name. But Beanie Bishop, not only is he a first-team all-conference slot corner, he was Pro Football Focus second-team returner in the Conference USA. So maybe he can help there. I think it's going to be a fun competition because Stapp and Bishop are going to be here for spring ball. They already enrolled in classes, I should say. And so it's going to be, what does it look like between Ryan Stapp and Terrell Smith? You know, we'll see what else ends up coming up, popping up there. Maybe Jalen Glaze, or we'll see where Miles Fleming's at in his injury recovery. But in the slot, too, I think it's going to be a lot of fun for Danny Collins to figure out. You know, Beanie Bishop, Stephen Ortiz, Solomon Brown there. I think you can make a case for all three of them. But the nice thing is, Luke, not only do you bring in quality depth, you have quality collegiate players that have proven at the collegiate level.
Yeah.
It's not too big for them. And that's where, I mean, you have, I think, one of the best safety duos in the Big Ten West, and Tyler Newbin and Jordan Howden coming back. And if Ryan Stapp and Beanie Bishop can provide something there as well, I mean, I think this defense has a chance to be pretty good.
Yeah, and surprisingly, as we came into 2021, you know, our biggest question mark was secondary. And coming into 2022, you know, our confidence might be most in the secondary, which it's crazy to see how much that changes from year to year. And that's what makes college football just so much fun, right? You know, you have an influx of players in and out of the program every year. And that's traditional, given just like, you know, eligibility lapsing. But also now with the transfer portal, it makes it even more of a circus for you to cover, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was going to get a break after the bowl game, but between transfers and transfers in and staff moves and everything, it's been been quite the few weeks. So I'm hoping these final couple of weeks of January may be a little bit slower. But as evident by this podcast here, Minnesota getting a commitment during the podcast is very on brand. But like the way I look at here's how we can end it, Luke. The way I look at the portal now, there have never been as many players in the portal as there have been this year.
Yeah.
I think that's to be expected with the second year of the immediate eligibility thing and just the honest conversations that Minnesota was having. And they're happening at every program across the country. And I think if you're not using the portal, like a team like Minnesota is right now, and I think Minnesota's got, if you look at just the transfer rankings that we have on 24/7, Minnesota's got a top 15 transfer class, and that's without Chris Smith's rating added to it. But like, if you're not using the portal in 2022, you're falling behind. And that's where I look at maybe some of the other programs. Like, I'm going to have to look quick. I don't even know if I was taking a transfer in.
I did read somewhere recently that they had like the fewest number of guys transfer out. So, I mean,
so they've had 5 guys hit the portal and they have not taken any back.
Yeah.
That I will tell you, if Iowa does not take a transfer, or I don't understand Iowa taking a transfer at some position.
There's going to be an interesting case study, though, Ryan, in the next couple of years, just on like what the right strategy was. Everybody is kind of placing their bets now. I think it's too early to tell, but I'll tell you this: like in my vocation, you know, I'm trying to hire engineers all the time, right? And if I'm basically going to say like, hey, you have to come into the office every day, I'm going to be cooked, right? I have to be able to hire hybrid people that are going to largely work, you know, in a distributed fashion. And I think similarly, it's going to be interesting to see how the college football plays out, because it's going to have to be, you either going to embrace the portal or die, right? And we don't know that for sure, but that it kind of feels like that might be the way it's going to lean.
Yes, I just can't believe. I mean, you look at all these programs again. I think the SEC is certainly benefiting from it more than most. But even a team like Minnesota, I mentioned, you know, some of the takes that Minnesota's had. Like, would I take Chris Smith over Rashad Chaney? Yes. Would I take Chuck Filiaga over Saya? Absolutely. Quinn Carroll over, you know, Curtis Dunlap? I think I would. So it's just like, you're able to, and I hate, you know, looking at college sports this way, and I might offend some people, but you're trimming the fat off the roster now. Like, some of the guys that weren't going to play, and it was pretty evident, you know, a year or two or three into it, like, those guys are able to now hit the portal, and they're able to find somewhere that they don't have to sit out. They can go play immediately. Where on the flip side of things, you can do like Minnesota's done and taking all these all-conference guys at maybe lower levels than what they were compared to the Big Ten, but they have proven at the collegiate level that they can be helpers. They can at least help you contribute. And, you know, they won't be here forever. So, you know, whether it's 1 or 2 years, and you can still focus on high school recruiting and different things like that. But I think it helps your roster become so much more efficient in the way that it kind of cycles through. You know, if you have a bad take, he doesn't have to take up a scholarship for 4 years and not help the program.
Or five.
Yeah. You know, so, he can.
But let's look at it this way, though, Ryan, because, you know, I think that this, in some ways, is football is finally catching up to basketball, right? And what I mean by that is, in college basketball, there's been a lot of transfers for a long time, right? And there's also a lot of guys in basketball. This is, again, my perception. This is just my opinion perception. I don't have stats to back this up, but I think you see a lot of guys take lower level than maybe their talent is, because they want it to be the right playing fit. They either want to play right away. And I think football is similarly seeing something like that. It's not just to be on the team. It's like, these guys want to play and they want to find the spot for them to play. And for some of them, they want to go, hey, I proved it at this level and I now want to prove it at this level. And I think this is kind of just football catching up to where basketball's been at for the better part of 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely. So I'm all for the kind of the way Minnesota's played the portal. I think they played it well. Shockingly, the guy that covers the Gophers thinks they played it well, because as some of you tell me, I only view the program through maroon and gold color glasses. But like, would you sucks that Kai Thomas and MJ.
Oh yeah, you're
left,
good.
But
you're going to live and die by the portal. It's they're going to come and they're going to go, right? Like, it's going to be both ways.
It is what it is. Yeah. Like, it just is what it is in 2022 now.
I do have a question for you, though, on the portal. So, this is just my perception again. But my perception is that, like, you have a way to definitely build overall talent on your roster, no question. But I think most of the time for a team like Minnesota, you're probably going to get guys that are going to, they're going to have high, like low floors, but not necessarily super high ceilings. Like, I think you're still going to get your really high ceiling guys probably through the high school recruiting ranks. That's just kind of my perception. I know Jack Gibbons.
For a team like Minnesota, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's my thought.
I think I would agree. Like, your higher ceiling guys are probably going to come through the high school recruiting, but your high floor guys are definitely, I mean, I look at the guys that Minnesota's taken out of the portal, they're high floor guys. Now, do some of them have higher ceilings than others? Yeah. Guys like Ryan Stapp, guys like Beanie Bishop, guys like Chris Smith, guys like, the Quinn Carrolls of the world, but certainly have higher floors
they can actually
help you.
Yeah. Let's take one of our private discussions more public now. Right. So, like, we've talked about privately, you and I, that Purdue does a really good job of getting some really high ceiling guys. Right. But their overall depth of talent, I wouldn't say is necessarily on par with Minnesota in terms of, like, you know, the depth of guys like along the defensive line, like what Minnesota had last year. Right. But then again, like, they have the much higher ceiling guy in George Karlofkis. No question. He was by far if you compare the two rosters, he was much higher. And I would be interesting to see if Minnesota's approach in terms of getting, you know, the higher floor guys ends up winning out in a conference like the Big Ten West over time, because that depth is such a huge thing in football in general.
Well, especially on like the defensive line, where Minnesota likes to rotate four guys. Like,
right.
They want to rotate four defensive ends and four defensive tackles. And I look at, like, do I think that Trill Carter and Jacob Schuster and Devin Eastern have higher ceilings than, say, Darnell Jeffries and Lorenzo Sergers? Absolutely. But, like, they need to get older for the production on the field to match up with what their ceiling could potentially be down the line. Now, again, could you potentially be sacrificing some of that ceiling if one of these guys hits the portal or something? Sure. But, again, you have to find that. It's a tightrope that you have to walk, but you have to walk it, if that makes sense. If you're going to, number one, win in the short term and not have a rebuilding season or two, which will hurt you in recruiting, if you can maintain a consistent level of play and allow those higher ceiling guys like Austin Booker, you know, to be able to get to year three in a weight program before he hits the field, that's going to help not only the kid, but it's also going to help your program.
Also, like, one of the things, you know, I have maybe poked fun at Jerry Kill a little bit. One of the things that he said that still resonates with me today is the second you get a kid in your program, that's when the real recruiting starts, right? Or sorry, when they get them committed, right? But I feel like that's even true now with the transfer portal, is like, you have to recruit those kids every day. Like, you have to recruit them in terms of, like, being a part of your culture. And I think this is where Fleck, it's good and bad, right? He's able to retain the guys that want to be there and that want the opportunity within his culture and the playing time fits. And then the others are just going to move on. And you know what? Frankly, that's okay. And I think this is maybe actually a good opportunity for Fleck in general in how they're approaching this.
Yes. So everybody's going to have their different transfer philosophy. And that's where I think even Dabo Swinney has been incredibly resistant to the portal, but even he's offering guys in the portal now, because there are quality players everywhere in the portal. Now, are the quality guys highly sought after? Certainly, but it's just the way that kind of college football is in this day and age.
Yeah. Okay. Ryan, always fun to chat. Always fun to, you know, get your perspective, especially on the recruiting stuff. Again, if you have been a longtime listener, like many of you have, and you haven't taken the jump into Gopher Illustrated, if it's not for Paramount Plus, like, do it for Ryan Burns, because he does an excellent job. I do appreciate all the work that he does. I have to be honest, Ryan, I'm a little busy to read all of your stuff, but I do try and get on it. And if you like basketball as well, Ryan James does an excellent job. So again, for everybody that listened, we appreciate it, and go Gophers.
The greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at LEGENDZ.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.